from spooky legends past, down through generations, to haunted locations that hold a ghostly past. Come one, come all, come finders and seekers, hear the creepy side of Nepa.
Welcome to the creepy side of Nepa. I am Dan Kozlowski. Hard to believe, here we are, the end of October, the height of the Halloween season. The Halloween holiday is now here. Before we get into tonight's episode, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the creepy side of Nepa this past Halloween season, and also your continued listenership. We are not stopping the creepy side of Nepa just because the Halloween season is over. We continue this show year-round. What I'm going to do is ask a little bit of help from the viewers. If you have a story you would like to share on the creepy side of Nepa, or maybe you just have an idea for an upcoming episode, we would love to hear from you. You could reach us at ghost@wnap.com. Again, that email address is ghost@wnap.com. Or you could also contact us through our Facebook page, WNAP's Creepy Side of Nepa. And while you're there, make sure to follow us. That is the best way to always be informed on the latest show information. If you haven't already, please like, subscribe, or follow The Creepy Side of Nepa on whichever podcasting platform that you're listening to us on. We have a great episode in store for you this evening for Halloween, All Hallows Eve. Here we are on October 30th, the night before Halloween. We have a great episode for you tonight. Joining us here on The Creepy Side is Maximum W. Furick. Maximum is going to discuss a little bit about the Smurl Haunting in West Pittston, Pennsylvania, who has been picking up some interest with the new Conjuring movie has just been released last month. Also talk a little bit about exorcisms and some just about the paranormal in general. Maxim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. It was great the first time around. And so, you know, yeah, let's do it again.
Exactly.
Looking forward to our chat.
I know that with all the talk of the Smurl Haunting recently with the new Conjuring movie, you're the first name that popped into my mind because I know we talked about the Smurl Haunting a little bit in the last interview.
Correct. I published a book called Co-Region Hoodoo, Paranormal Tales from Inside the Pit. And that's about the supernatural aspects of northeastern Pennsylvania and western Pennsylvania. And again, as we discussed the last time, Dan, I always felt that Pennsylvania paranormal authors tend to focus more on Lancaster and the White Witches and the Hex Signs, and also Gettysburg and the lost wandering souls and the ghost. And I just thought that, you know, our area has been pretty much like discounted and just ignored. So when I wrote Co-Region Hoodoo, and hoodoo meaning either a blessing or a curse, I spoke about a whole lot of things like Shepton, like Centralia, like Chestnut Ridge, but also the Smurl Haunting. And I feel personally connected to the Smurl Haunting just because, I mean, I've been with it over the years. You know, I stayed with it, and I knew Ed and Lorraine Warren, and then, you know, the episode with Annabelle in Gettysburg, that was the latest thing, which was just pretty much horrific, you know, the way you look at it. But anyway, I feel a personal connection to the Smurl Haunting.
And how did you get to meet Ed and Lorraine Warren?
Okay, so in the 80s, around, let's say 1986, there started to be a lot of media attention about the Smurl Haunting. You know, they were reporting infestations, demonic activity, you know, the smells, the grunts,
right,
the profanities, all that stuff, you know. And so there was a book that was written by Robert Curran. He was a writer for the Scranton Tribune. And it was co-written by Jack and Janet Smurl and by Ed and Lorraine Warren. Well, I found out that Ed and Lorraine were going to be in Jim Thorpe to do they were on a 15-city book signing tour for The Haunted. That was Bob Curran's book. So I got permission from the owner of the Victorian Theater to be there to interview them, to take pictures. And one of my fondest memories, you know, as a paranormal author, is hanging out on the streets of Jim Thorpe, you know, on this wonderful, balmy summer night with Ed and Lorraine Warren, talking about, you know, the existence of evil and the realm of demonology and the rite of exorcism and all this stuff that, I mean, I really enjoy talking about. So I met them in 1988. and I stayed in touch with him. And I called Ed numerous times just to pick his brain, you know, when I was researching various articles on demonology. But Ed and Lorraine were very nice to me. They were very friendly. They were mentors, you know, very kind. And Lorraine was a lover of animals. I mean, I would call them up, and you could hear the rooster in the background, you know. So they were, you know, they were nice people to me, and I'm one of their biggest supporters.
And you said you met them in about 1988. Is that right after the Schmirl haunting happened?
Well, it was right after the book came out. Schmirl haunting, the infestation happened over a number of years, but finally it resulted in a book that was written by Robert Curran. He did the skillful writing, and then it was also cobbled together with narrative and notes from Jack and Janet Schmirl, who were not journalists. You know, they were people that were being tormented and demonized.
Sure.
And then also Ed and Lorraine Warren, even though there's at least 7 books with their name at the top. You know, they didn't write these. They had ghostwriters, but because they had fame, they had, you know, they got their name at the top of the thing. You know, that's how that works. But I met them in 1988, right after the book came out, and Jack and Janet Schmirl went with Ed and Lorraine to Chicago, and then they went with them to New York City, and they were part of this tour. And that was really well-funded, and the book even though it wasn't that great a book, it was a bestseller. It sold a lot of copies. And then the Fox made-for-TV movie, The Haunted, came out. So the Schmirl affair, you know, really had a lot of publicity. People knew about it. Ed and Lorraine made the talk show circuit.
A lot of people were just interested to hear what exactly happened in that house.
Exactly. And again, you've heard this story before, you know, and in my book, The Schmirl Haunting, when Ed and Lorraine came to town, I take the Schmirl Haunting and I compare and contrast with other alleged haunted houses, including Amityville, the Hinsdale House, and Wooksbarra's Wells House. And I want to say this, you know, in my research, I discovered that the Schmirl haunting was the most intense. It was the most horrific. And the difference between the Schmirl haunting and all the other ones was that Jack Schmirl claimed that he had been raped by a female demon, a succubus. And Janet Schmirl also claimed that she had been molested by some evil spirit. That didn't happen in Amityville. That didn't happen in the Wells House. So it's, you know, there was just a higher level of intensity. You know, I certainly have my theory about why that happened, but that's the uniqueness with what happened in West Pittston. And
it sort of makes it stand out from the others.
It most certainly did. It most certainly did, you know.
So you would say this is more intense, the Schmirl one was, than the other ones you're talking about. So Amityville and the others. But why do you think Amityville became more popular?
Well, here's what happened. In Amityville, you know, this was a story about 23-year-old Butch DeFeo. And they lived in Amityville in Long Island. They were very wealthy people. I think the father had a Buick dealership. Butch would walk around with a lot of money, thousands of dollars in his pocket. But on a horrible night, he took a rifle. He shot his father twice, shot his mother twice, and then he killed his 2 sisters and his 2 brothers. And they talked about 8 shots, 6 autopsies. And here's the thing that of interest. Well, there's a lot of things. But Butch DeFeo claimed that he was possessed by a demon. And so when the prosecution put him on trial, they had to encourage, they had to go and convince the jury that it wasn't demonic possession, but that Butch DeFeo had a personality disorder and that he was a sociopath, i.e. he had no remorse for his fellow human beings, and also he needed instant gratification. And he was a drug user. It was methamphetamine, heroin. He was prescribed Thorazine. I mean, he was a messed up kid that killed his family. And we can't let that go. This is matricide. This is patricide. I mean, we can't. I mean, this is the worst sins in the Bible.
Right.
And again, that's why Amityville resonates. So So he kills his family, and then George and Kathy Lutz buy the house for $80,000, which is a really good price. And then they had, I think it was 28 days of demonic infestation. Whether you believe it or not, you know, like I think the latest, word on that was when George Lutz's attorney claimed that over two bottles of wine, they conjured up the Amityville horror and all this stuff. I say this, if you Google Amityville and take a look at all of the books, all of the motion pictures that have been put out, you know, portraying Amityville, anybody who writes a book is going to make money because Amityville is a cash cow. It's a cottage industry. I mean, we are riveted by it. And Amityville just stands at the top of it. I talk about Amityville for two reasons. One, Ed and Lorraine Warren were some of the first investigators, the psychic investigators, to go there and to investigate it. And also comparing Amityville with the Schmurl House. And again, for any project, you know, you need to do that. You need to compare and contrast. You need to show, you know, why, for example, in this case, why the West Pittston Schmurl haunting was more significant, or why it was different than some of these other infestations.
So in the Conjuring movie series, the Schmurl haunting seems to be their last movie. But was it their last investigation between Ed and Lorraine?
Let me say, well, this took place in the 80s. I believe that it was. You know, but when you take a look at the Conjuring universe, this is the ninth installment. But it started off in chronological order. It started off with the two, Nun and Nun 2, and then Annabelle, and I believe the Return of Annabelle, and then it got into the Conjuring and Conjuring 2. So the Ed and Lorraine Warren were noted for going to Amityville, but also for going to the Perrone farmhouse in Rhode Island, and also going to North London. Evidently, the Catholic Church had heard about this, and they sent them over there. And this was pretty much on the QT. They did this under the radar. And the reason for that is, I mean, the church, you know, there's a lot of people that are just hysterical, they're needy, they're mentally ill. And with anything, especially with exorcism, the church has to find out if these people that claim to be possessed with demons are actually possessed or if they're mentally ill. Now, we know that Father Amorth, he was the Vatican's exorcist, and there was a wonderful movie called The Pope's Exorcist with Russell Crowe. Came out about 2023, I believe, but it's just an excellent movie that's really well done and accurate. But Father Amorth said this. He says, I deal with the 2%. He goes, I don't care about the other 98%. And he's talking about people that are schizophrenic or have Tourette's or have bipolar, whatever. He's dealing with the 2% of the people that, you know, the church believes, the Vatican believes, are actually possessed by demons. And Daniel, consider this too. You know, there is a long, centuries-long debate on whether or not evil exists, whether or not the devil exists. And I certainly believe that evil does exist in many shapes and forms, and that the devil exists. And so did, you know, Pope Francis. He said that, you know, the devil is here in the modern age. Pope John Paul II was the one that put together a college for exorcists, and he invited something like 132 priests from 30 countries to learn this medieval rite of exorcism. And not only that, but Pope John Paul II rewrote the rite of exorcism that had been written 400 years earlier, and he updated it for the modern day. So many Catholic theologians and exorcists believe that, you know, that the devil exists, the demonic energies exist, and we believe that demonic energies could infest in people, places, and things. And on July the 11th, it was this year, it was on a Friday. I went with my wife, to talk my wife into going with me to Gettysburg to see, she agreed, to go to see Annabelle, the alleged demonic doll. Now, Annabelle was the most famous relic that was in Ed and Lorraine's the Warren Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut. Lorraine always wanted Annabelle to stay there in the museum. Annabelle was in this 5-foot wooden cage with a glass window from a church. The Lord's Prayer was affixed to the back. There were three crucifixes representing the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And the wood was infused with both holy water and holy oil. So I went there to Gettysburg, and I saw this doll that looks like Annabelle, and that looks like Raggedy Ann, rather. And I met Dan Rivera. Dan Rivera was the chief handler for Annabelle. He was the Methodist that converted to Catholicism, and he was, you know, all these guys that were there are very devout Christians. They believe that the power of devil is great, of the devil, but the power of God is greater. I met Dan Rivera. Dan and I chatted. We had a great time talking about different things. He suggested that I reach out to Karen Schmerl, because he knew Karen on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So Dan and I told Dan I was writing a book about the Schmerl haunting, and he knew a bunch about it. We agreed to do a phone conversation, an interview on Monday, July the 14th, when Dan went back to Monroe, Connecticut. Dan passed away on Sunday the 13th. He died the day before I was supposed to interview him. And a lot of people are saying, well, it's just a coincidence. But then a lot of other people that I know, including the psychic Vincent sisters from Butler, Pennsylvania, believe that Annabelle had demonic energies and that somehow Dan Rivera was worn down by these demonic energies, and that was the cause of his death. So that's one interpretation. The other one is that we shouldn't talk about this. We should allow the Rivera family to grieve in peace and don't say anything about it. And not only the psychic Vincent sisters, but also Chris McKennell, who is Ed and Lorraine's grandson, is saying that Annabelle never should have been taken out of Monroe, Connecticut. But I'll tell you what, you know, when you want to know why Tony Spira and his people took Annabelle out of Monroe, when I was in Gettysburg, there were 1,240 people there. Like me and my wife,
yep.
each paying $40 a head, 1,240. So I don't have my calculator here, but if you could just throw those numbers together.
Yeah, it's a high number.
Yep. It's a high number. So,
and I got to say, I was in Gettysburg a few weeks after this, and it was still the talk of the town.
Yeah, I know. So they did it in the Gettysburg Orphanage, and that orphanage had a really, really horrible history because the governess had a place called the Pit, where she took the little kids, the orphans, and she tortured them. And she had these kids she called stick boys. And these young kids had sticks, and they would beat the other orphans with the sticks. So this was just a horrible, horrible place. But 1,240, so that was Gettysburg. But also Tony Spira and his group took Annabelle to San Antonio, to West Virginia, and to New Orleans, as well as Gettysburg. But when Annabelle was in New Orleans, there was the plantation fire. One of Louisiana's largest sugarcane plantations burned. There was the jailbreak, the 11 convicts, some of them for murder, busted out of the New Orleans jail. It was an inside job, but it happened during when Annabelle was there. And then the voodoo queen, Marie Laveau, her house was burned. There was a fire there. So
it just makes you wonder, really, when you see stuff like that happen, that sort of lines up.
Well, I asked Dan Rivera about it. I said, what do you think about New Orleans? And he said he thought it was a coincidence. Okay, well, then when Dan Rivera died, some people are saying it's a coincidence. But, you know, it was J. Allen Hynek who gave us the Close Encounters of the First, Second, Third, and Fourth Kind. He talked about high strangeness, different levels of high strangeness. And I contend, you know, with the things that happened in New Orleans, with Dan Rivera's death, with all of these things, it's not just one thing. It's just not two coincidences, but it's three and four and a whole lot others. There's something going on here. I mean, I don't know what you want to call it. You know, we have a hard time defining what the paranormal is, but there's something happening, something of substance that is beyond the scope of science. You know, that's the supernatural, that's the paranormal, yep. and that's what's happening here. So I don't know, but I mean, people around me, and, you know, and I'm with, you know, connected with a lot of people in the paranormal community, they are saying that there was something happening here of a demonic nature, and that's why Dan Rivera died.
So you mentioned that he died one day before your scheduled interview. Did he ever get a chance to talk to the Smurl relative?
Talk to who?
The Smurl relative that was also scheduled to interview with too?
I reached out to Karen Schmerl, who is now a paranormal investigator, and Karen is making the rounds on a lot of the talk shows. You know, so she's a big hit. As a matter of fact, let me see who I was just interviewed by, Jumpin' Jeff Walker.
Okay, Brent Terzi.
Yeah, and he just prior to interviewing me, he interviewed Karen. But I tried to reach out to Karen, and she didn't respond. So I thought I'm not going to go and bug her, harass her, or do anything. I mean, I'm listed. If she wants to contact me, she can. I did want to talk to her, but again, Dan Rivera suggested that I reach out to her because Dan was friends with her on Facebook. So that's why I did it. But
and coming back to the Smurl haunting for a minute here, I know it has been quiet for years. Do you think the Ed and Lorraine Warren had something to do with it stopping in the end?
I don't think it was Ed and Lorraine Warren, but Ed and Lorraine Warren, Ed was an exorcist, a lightweight exorcist, and he tried to go and excise the demon, and he couldn't. So he brought in Father McKenna from Monroe, Connecticut. Father McKenna was what's called a rogue priest because he refused to go along with Vatican II. Remember, Vatican II was the Catholic Church's attempt at modernizing the church. It was like our kumbaya moment, you know, when we would the churches were allowed to say the mass in any language other than, you know, not just Latin, but in any other language. But anyway, many Catholics were, you know, thought that Pope John the 23rd was the devil himself for changing the church, for trying to modernize it. And Father McKenna was one of them. And Father McKenna refused to go along with Vatican II. But nonetheless, he was invited to West Pittston. He went there three times. He attempted to do the exorcist three times, and he failed. And so it was Bishop, from Scranton, Timlin. Bishop Timlin realized that he didn't have a exorcist in Luzerne and Lackawanna County that could get the job done, a competent exorcist. So he reached out to New York State to Father Alphonse Trebolt. And Father Trebolt came and attempted four exorcisms before he cleansed the house. Now, again, we believe, though, and those that believe in the demonic forces believe that demonic energies can infest people, places, and things. And so we believe that it infested that house. We believe that it infested the Annabelle doll. And it may have infested objects or some of the people, you know, some of the Schmurls, because when they went on a camping trip, they reported, you know, demonic activities. But after those, Schmurls finally left that home in West Pittston. Remember, they moved in after the Agnes flood of 72 because everybody got flooded out. So that's the reason why they went to West Pittston. But they moved into this duplex. They had their two daughters and they had two other ones. So they had four daughters. And then on the other side was Jack's parents. So Jack's parents also heard things. But when we're talking about what exactly did they experience? Well, they experienced the smells, the grunting, the profanities written on the mirror, the rape, the sexual assault of Jack and Janet. Dawn Schmurl witnessing their dog Simon, their German Shepherd dog, being raised, levitated, and thrown against the wall. Just a lot of crazy things that, again, we have heard these before. We have heard the similar things in other haunted houses. But we don't have the uniqueness with Amityville is the horror, the murder, the patricide, right, and matricide that begats that haunting. But then with the Schmurl haunting, there's the horrible sexual assault that Jack reported. So,
and it seems like while all this was happening at the Schmurl haunting, it seemed to be quite the spectacle too. People were going to the house all the time.
Yeah, I went there numerous times, but I'll tell you, I want to say this in my defense. I mean, I know there were rubberneckers and ambulance chasers there. I stayed in the background. I was just watching. I was observing. I did not reach out to the Schmurls. You know, they were under assault by demonic forces, by the media, and by the public, public that didn't believe them. They thought that they were hoaxers, that they were just lying. They were just doing it for money. But Janet Schmurl reported that she would have over 50 phone calls a day from media people all over the world that wanted to do an exclusive interview. I mean, it was horrible what they were dealing with. And they were devout Christians. They were devout Catholics. And they brought in the priest. They had their priest come in to do a blessing. The priest had the permission from the bishop to do an exorcism. The priest spent the night there, and little by little, you know, I mean, they're finding that they weren't able to go and get rid of, you know, these sights and sounds and smells. So finally, Father McKenna, after the Ed and Lorraine came and spent four nights there. They came with a nurse who was a psychic, but they couldn't do anything. So they brought in Father McKenna, who couldn't do anything. And then finally, Father Alphonse Trebolt was the one who came and got the job done. But it's a long story. It took a long time. The problem with the book, The Haunted, with Robert Curran, that it was it told the story up until 1988. But then there was more that happened, especially with Father Alphonse Trebolt. So you know, nonetheless, the book was successful. I think it was in Red Book. I think they serialized it in Red Book, and it was popular, commercially successful endeavor. And I'll say this, people that say, well, they made money from it. Well, yes, they did. And so what? So what? Right. I mean, just because they made money does not mean that they were lying or pulling a con on anybody. I mean, listen, we live in the United States of America. You know, we're chasing that buck. You know, if you do it right, if you have the right commodity and if you market it properly, you know, you can make a whole lot of money. Just like with your podcast. I mean, if you get 1 billion followers, you know, you got some.
Sure.
Some,
and people some are interested in paranormal and things they can't explain.
Exactly. And I think, you know, when people ask me, I'm on like a numerous podcasts, but when they ask me, what's my motivation? What's my incentive? And I'm curious. I mean, I'm not this crazy zealot. I'm not this crazy freakaholic. I'm like, I think there's an Indiana Jones in all of us that, you know, we want to find out what's around the corner. We want to climb the mountain. We want to find the Holy Grail. And I think a lot of us are driven by that curiosity. And certainly those of us who are, you know, intrigued by the paranormal, I think, you know, are driven by that, just that curiosity to just find out, you know, what it's all about. And, you know, it's just an amazing thing. So, you know, that's why I do it. And, but there's two things. One, I want to try to do something. I want to go and add to the discussion in the paranormal. And I want to do this as in an academic way, in a serious academic way. The other thing is I want to continue to be a proponent for Northeastern Pennsylvania. My book, Coal Region Hoodoo, you know, I took that Louisiana voodoo bayou term hoodoo, and I just took it and, you know, plagiarized it, ripped it off, but used it for our own. And it makes sense. It's the Coal Region hoodoo. And it means either a blessing or a curse. And when you take a look around at what we have up here, whether it's the Schmurl haunting, the Wells haunting, Centralia, the cursed town, you know, the Irish Catholic priest put a curse on Centralia, the Shepton mythology, all of the weird stuff that happened there. I mean, you know, in Duryea, Albert Bender, the guy that conjured the Men in Black. I mean, I don't know how many of your listeners know about that, but the Men in Black were...
No, that one I never heard of, I don't think.
Yeah, you see a flying saucer, and then all of a sudden there's these government agents.
Yep, with the fedora. I heard of them, and then all the movies about them and stuff.
Yeah. Well, the truth is more believable, and that was Albert Bender from Duryea, Pennsylvania, who put that together. And then the other one is Richard Sharp Shaver from Berwick, Pennsylvania. Shaver was investigated by the FBI. They blamed him for conjuring up the flying saucer hysteria of the 1940s. a guy from Duryea and a guy from Berwick are part of the UFO tapestry. Little known individuals from our neck of the woods. So
there's a lot of paranormal, I guess you would say, happenings that sort of center right around this area.
There are. And, you know, when we talk about ghosts and demons and ghosts maybe being lost souls, you know, when you talk about Gettysburg, especially, there's a lot of wandering lost souls that maybe they don't know that they're dead. You know, they're going back and forth. Maybe they're trapped in limbo or a type of purgatory. We don't know. But then there's also demons, demonic forces. And, you know, I've had this discussion with a lot of people, especially younger people that are ghost hunters that go into abandoned prisons or abandoned mental institutions looking for spirits. And it's almost a case of buyer beware because you don't know what you might find. I mean, there may be malevolent forces there. There may be demonic energies. They're waiting for somebody who's vulnerable, you know, to go and attach them. And it starts with temptation, attachment, infestation, and possession. So there's a progress to this. I'll also say this. I mean, just a warning to the folks that play around with seances and Ouija boards. If you're playing with a Ouija board, you know, you don't know what entity may pop up. You don't know what energy.
Yep,
may.
I did hear that in the past. It could be good. It could be evil.
Exactly. Now, those people that are schooled, that are skilled in the use of the Ouija board, speak to a certain specific spirit, asking them for guidance and asking them for questions. So that's the difference. That's between the difference between people that know what they're doing, as opposed to people that are doing this haphazardly and doing this on a whim. And I was out at Butler, Pennsylvania, early in the year. I was a guest speaker at the Butler Paranormal Conference. I was on stage with the psychic Vincent sisters, and as they were speaking, this guy, this ghost hunter, brought out his camera and showed pictures. He had been attacked, physically attacked, just like the Schmurls, in the night, and his chest was ripped open, his eyeball was hanging out. He showed pictures of this, and the psychic Vincent sisters believed that there was an attachment, that by him going to all these haunted places, these alleged haunted houses, that he somehow provoked a demonic spirit and energy to come, and it, you know, manifested it. It attached to him. So, again, I believe that there's a demonic realm. I believe that evil exists. In my book, The Schmurl Haunting, I have a chapter called Something Wicked This Way Comes, and that was a quote from Shakespeare. But I talk about, you know, I try to look at the essence of evil, and evil comes in many shapes and forms, and I talk about some of those various things in the book. And I also have a chapter called The Apostles of Exorcism, where I take a look at people like Father Amorth, and also I take a look at the first one that I list is Jesus Christ of Nazareth. The first miracle that Jesus did was an exorcism. And if you read the Old Testament, exorcisms are a dime a dozen. They're old hat. They happen all the time. And Jesus told his disciples that you too can excise these demons if you do it in my name and if you do it, you know, in my spirit. So he taught them how they can do this. And again, this rite of exorcism has been around for, you know, for, you know, a long, long time. And the church is still doing this. The church believes that evil exists. The church, and, you know, the other people, the other side of the coin, Daniel, believe that believing in the devil and evil is an old fairy tale, that it's something that the church and their parents use to scare us. You know, if you don't say your prayers, the devil's going to get you. You know, if you don't go to church, you're going to go to hell. You know, all of that. We've heard this a million times. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. You know, but I personally don't believe that, and I'm not trying to convince anybody over to my side. I'm just writing what I believe and backing it up with words and cases of other people. So, you know, the Schmurl Haunting, when Ed and Lorraine came to town, isn't just about the Schmurl Haunting, but it's about the realm of demonology and the rite of exorcism.
And if anyone listening was interested in picking up a copy of that book or either your Cold Region Hoodoo, where's the best place you'd be able to find it?
Yeah, do this. go on my website. It's MaximFurek.com, www.MaximFurek.com, MaximFurek.com. And then it talks a little bit about me and some of my other books. But that's the best way to do that. And I would also say this to all your listeners, support local. Support your local podcasts, support your local bookstores, support your local authors. We need to do this. You know, this this is the only way we can go and do battle against the demonic, you know, industrial, you know, corporations that are out there. You know, I mean, you know, we're the little guys. You know, so like we're asking for your help. You know, we need your help. So
we're the little guys, and I always think local paranormal stories are just more interesting. It sort of hits home.
Yeah, and I'm honored to be. I think I kind of win by default, you know, because I've written a whole bunch of books. But I mean, I believe I'm the leading paranormal author and researcher in northeastern Pennsylvania. I think through default. I mean, I don't know of a whole lot of other folks that have written, you know, as many books. But you know, the Coleridge and Hoodoo and the Schmerl Haunting are just excellent books, and I certainly recommend them.
Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us tonight.
Daniel, thank you so much, and keep up the good work. I think, you know, you have a wonderful program, and happy Halloween to all your listeners.
Well, thank you very much, and happy Halloween to you, too.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Creepy Side of NEPA. I hope you enjoy your Halloween holiday, and I hope you're able to join us back here throughout the year for more new episodes on The Creepy Side of NEPA. And once again, if you have an idea for an upcoming episode, we would really like to hear from you. Our email address is ghost@wnep.com. But until then, enjoy The Creepy Side of NEPA.
This has been The Creepy Side of NEPA. If you have a spooky story that took place in northeastern or central Pennsylvania, send it to ghost@wnep.com for your chance to share it on an upcoming episode. We're dying to hear from you.